And we're here with the follow-up show.
Yep.
We're back live again. How's it going, everybody? I hope you enjoyed that show that we just did with Professor Ricardo Almeida. Man, what a cool guy.
He looks better in this box where I'm in. He looks...
Oh, come on. Yeah. You look fine. That was pretty epic for me to be able to talk to him.
That's
chat about this stuff. Like, this is... I mean, I want to get as many of these world-class martial artists on here as we can. Just so that, you know, it helps to educate people about what martial arts actually is. Instead of us talking about it all the time, we have experts come on that have this kind of experience, and they can explain these different art forms. Like, I'd like to get some guys from, like, different martial arts, karate, kickboxing, tai chi, I don't care. Just bring them on. I'm working on Dr. Bodhi Sanders. He's a Black Belt Hall of Famer. I think he just had, like, knee surgery or something. So he told me he was definitely going to come on. But we just got to get the date nailed. I've had him on my show years ago. And yeah, he's a really cool guy. He does a lot. He's written a book called The Wisdom Warrior. So he gets into all the philosophy stuff and how it relates to life. And I like that kind of stuff. So
did Ricardo, he fought in the UFC.
Yeah.
And how many fights did he have?
I think he had a record of like 15 and 5 or something, or 13 and 5, something like that in MMA.
So legit.
Oh, very legit. And he fought in Japan. He fought in other circuits. He fought in, obviously, in was like Vale Tudo or whatever they do in Brazil. And then tons of jiu-jitsu competition. Yep. Like, that's as world-class as you can get. Like, and the guys that he trains are as world-class as you can get, you know?
So when it comes to those camps, so he's just a trainer in a camp, right? Is that correct? Like, so does he just do the BJJ stuff? And then he was mentioning that he has a striking coach as well. So do they break it down when the fighters are in a camp?
Well, usually you'd have a head coach or have someone that's sort of directing your camp. I'm guessing the fighter would also have a lot of input. Maybe for a particular opponent, you're going to really want to lean heavy on wrestling and grappling. So you're going to have way more focus on that. Maybe other times you need some kickboxing and some boxing. Depends on what challenge you're facing. And so I'll bet you that Professor Almeida would have been sort of like overviewing the training, you know, the jiu-jitsu side, making sure it's organized properly for them, getting the right kind of sparring partners and all that. And then just a wealth of knowledge to lean on, you know, with that kind of experience in both MMA and jiu-jitsu. I mean, that's how you would do it. So you see a lot more fighters now. They're bringing in expert coaches from all over the world in order to, like, the level is rising in all of these different sports. And that's what it takes. That's how you make it better, right?
Yep.
Is you just surround yourself with the best people you possibly can, right?
You know what I found pretty cool? I mean, coming from a football coach and doing live contact hitting and which with all the issues with the concussions and stuff, he said he hasn't sparred since 2011.
Yeah.
And it's funny, and when we're coaching football, we don't do that much live hitting anymore, just because it's so hard on the head, so hard on the body.
Yeah.
We try to get the kids to save that energy for the game. And we don't want them to get all banged up in practice, but it's hard on the head, right?
That's
such a massive issue with concussions right now and all this research and injury. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like, and I've been on that boat for a while. I mean, I used to, when I was younger, when I was in my 20s, like, I was up for sparring every day. Like, I'd spar all the time, you know, and we didn't care. You get an injury and then you bounce back from it like a day later. It was never a big deal. But these days I do a little bit of like light sparring or situational sparring, but I keep it light because, dude, I don't want to get hit like that anymore. It's not what I'm doing it for. I know that in the moment I'll pull the trigger, you know, if it really comes down to it. And I also want to create an environment. I was just talking to one of my students about this. I want to create an environment on my mats where people feel safe coming to train.
Yeah.
So many places you go in and you're going through a meat grinder every day. Like, you have to be a special kind of person to want to go through that kind of punishment. Okay. And everybody's got to go to work and go to their families. And martial arts should be something you add to your life. It shouldn't be something that, like, absorbs you completely and renders you useless to everything else you're doing. So I feel like finding more effective ways to coach people so they're learning the skills they need. They're getting enough live sparring in a way to make it effective, but you're not destroying your anatomy in the process, you know?
But you can roll every day,
you can roll.
That's what, like, BJJ is what it's easier on the body, right? Or any type of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
But okay, explain to me, what is the difference between BJJ and Japanese jiu-jitsu? And you specialize in your
Japanese,
black belt and Japanese jiu-jitsu. What is the difference?
It's a good question. Actually, I did do an episode on this a while back. And I mean, maybe there are people who have different opinions on how this goes, but essentially Japanese jiu-jitsu came from the lineage of the samurai tradition. So the majority of the things you'd be studying as a samurai, you know, preparing for battle would be weapon work. Mm-hmm. Most of what you'd be doing would be katana, bow and arrow, like all the different weapons that
that's
the samurai would use.
That's why my son has all these weapons now.
That's why your son has all these weapons. He wants to be a ninja turtle now. And so you would do a lot of that. And then when you're disarmed, your techniques are battlefield techniques. So like, for example, in judo, like, so judo became the sport public version of Japanese jiu-jitsu. So Japanese jiu-jitsu was reserved only for the elite warriors. It would be like what they train the military. You know what I mean? The average person can't go through that kind of training. So, and the techniques would be like just devastated. They're designed to kill you. So Jigoro Kano came from that tradition and said, okay, well, let's work on a system where we can have anybody train it. We can bring it into universities. We can help it with our culture to become an art form. And we'll use it as a competitive martial art just to help give the young people, you know, a competitive outfit that's healthy. And he had a lot of great writings too on the philosophy of martial arts. But anyways, so like judo would have been the offshoot of Japanese jiu-jitsu, would have been like a piece of it for general consumption. And then when the Gracies went and trained, they trained with some of these Japanese masters, what they did was they ended up adapting it to their, I guess, just, you know, the Brazilian culture, their whole idea of fighting. It was Julio and the Gracies that sort of founded this idea of, you know, how do we really focus in on that part of jiu-jitsu where it's the smaller man defeating the bigger man? You know, how do we deal? Because that's self-defense. Mm-hmm. And so when you take someone down to the ground and you know positional leverage, control, and technique, you now have an advantage over somebody that's stronger. So they tended to focus more on the ground because taking people to the ground and dominating the fight on the ground was a huge hole in like everybody's game in the martial art world. So from the Japanese side of things, there are the parent arts that, you know, sort of all these versions of MMA today come from. So you have like karate, that'd be the focus on striking. And that was a piece of Japanese jiu-jitsu. You'd have Aikido, which was developed by Mora Hayashiba. And it was a system, it was like Aki jiu-jitsu. So it was his sort of version of jiu-jitsu, which was just about manipulating your opponent's energy. It was like, you know, when they push, you pull. And that's where that sort of thing came from. And then you had the Kabuto, which was all the weapon work. Right. So when I did Japanese jiu-jitsu coming up, my sensei was very, very well rounded. And we did, like, you would work with sai, tanfa, stick, nunchaku, knife fighting, boken, bow staff, like, you know, all these weapons. So we would have to learn, okay, you got to learn all your breakfalls, your rolling, you would have your grappling section, you would have your judo and takedown section, you would have your self-defense section where you're like surrounded by people and they're just constantly attacking you and you're just doing, you know, basic defensive escapes. Then you would have the, you know, the weapons, I think I said that. And so you'd have like a well-rounded approach to martial arts. So real Japanese jiu-jitsu, and I've had the fortunate opportunity of training with like the best Japanese jiu-jitsu guys in the world. Like aside from just lineage Japanese masters, these guys are the best. And, unfortunately in Japanese jiu-jitsu world, there's a lot of fakers. There's a lot of guys. I feel like they're not doing the legit science any justice, and it gives Japanese jiu-jitsu a bad name. And when you talk to the average Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy about Japanese jiu-jitsu, you get this sort of like, oh, okay. Like they don't look at it as credible because a Japanese jiu-jitsu guy who's like a black belt will go and roll with a Brazilian jiu-jitsu blue belt and have trouble on the ground, you know, because Brazilian jiu-jitsu is a focused discipline and it became largely a competitive art like we were talking about. Like it started as self-defense and then it transitioned more to competitive grappling. So if a Japanese jiu-jitsu guy is more of a generalist coming at it like that, they're going in with a specialist, you know, to work with that. So that's kind of how it works. So Japanese jiu-jitsu, I would say, is the combat field fighting system of the samurai. It evolved into the sport version of judo. And then you have all these offshoots like Aikido and karate and all these variations of that. And then what the Brazilians did was they mixed in the ground game and evolved it. And then it's continued to evolve. And now we have these different styles and it sucks that we're all fighting about what's better and what's, you know, whatever. And I personally just love anything jiu-jitsu and anything martial arts. If it's effective and it works and it adds value and, you know, it's going to be something that helps people in their martial art journey, then I'm all for it. And I think everybody should maybe look at their own personality, really, and find out what they like to gravitate towards. Like, there are guys that I know that just, they absolutely hate rolling on the ground. They don't want to be on the ground. They don't want their system to be, they just, it doesn't come to them naturally. So they prefer to work on like just more of a stand-up style of fighting. But I would always recommend, if you're going to go that route, you need to learn how to defend takedowns so that you, you know, like you look at guys like Chuck Liddell in MMA. I think he was like a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He was a wrestler, but he never used that stuff in the octagon. He used his striking, and he would use all the other elements for defensive purposes, right? So that's how I look at it. But for me, I'm personally like, I look at Jiu-Jitsu as a concept. So you can apply the concept of Jiu-Jitsu in various areas of training. So you could take the concept of, you know, when they push, you pull, and you know, don't go against their energy, go with their energy. You can take those concepts, and I apply it when I teach kickboxing, when I teach karate, when I teach weapon work. It's all the same concept. It just depends as to whether or not people like to focus on applying that concept on the ground for competitive purposes, or whether they like to become a well-rounded martial artist. Mm-hmm. It's kind of my nutshell version of that. And then what we're hitting on something cool, and I was excited we got to touch on it a bit with Professor Almeida, which essentially jiu-jitsu is about learning how to be efficient and how to be successful at what you're doing. He was saying, when you go to the ground, you win. You learn how to win. You learn how to succeed. You learn how to get past all those barriers, right? And I feel like when we apply that concept and that mindset to everything else we do in life, then you have a real recipe to actually become successful at other things as well. So for me, the martial arts has always been this little training lab where I can test myself, find out my weaknesses and my strengths, and then take those lessons and apply them to the way that I operate in my relationships, in my business, in my just my philosophical thinking, whatever, all these different things. It's like a scientific method that's also an art form that's designed to work with both hemispheres of the brain. At the same time, you're then interfacing that with your body intelligence. And you're becoming, I think, a more holistic person by doing it like that. And that's why I believe martial arts is the cure for a lot of these things that we were talking about, like depression, anxiety, because you're teaching people how to overcome obstacles. Because nobody, like even to this day, I've been training guys my whole life in martial arts. And to this day, I will find people that are better than me in some area, and they will make me feel once again like I'm a white belt. It's just, no matter how long you train, you could train lifetimes, you always find someone that is more proficient in certain areas.
Well, for sure.
So they present a certain obstacle that you have to overcome. Yeah. And if you are the kind of person that just gives up easy and says, well, I'm just no good at this, and so I'm just going to give up and walk away from it because I met some adversity, man, martial arts is not for you. And I think life is not for you, because like life is going to throw you everything it can to challenge you, right? So I think the lessons there are really key, is like, how do you find, how, what's the blueprint? What's the mindset in order to become successful? And like, successful for me is not just making money and whatever, buying a house. It includes everything in your life. Mm-hmm. And I think if in one area of your life, you're cutting yourself short and you're saying, I don't deserve success in that area, or I feel guilty for being successful over here, or I feel like I don't have that belief in myself to really achieve my dreams, visions, and goals in life, then you're going to hold yourself back and you're going to resent yourself. And then those are the kind of people that end up resenting other people. And they just blame the world for all their problems. It's everybody's keeping me down. Everybody's keeping me down. I've had it harder than everybody else. And I feel like when I talk to people, you end up having this feeling like there's a competition to find out who's had it rougher.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Holy shit. Like that. And you sit at the water cooler at work, or you're just overhearing people talk at work. It's always who has it worse. Like, I want to outdo you
in my misery.
I only slept 2 hours last night. I outdid you slept 3 hours. I only slept 2 hours.
Yeah.
So you're better. I'm way worse today. Yeah. I can't function today because I only slept 2 hours. I don't go to work. I don't go out in public to hear people's negative bullshit.
Right.
I don't. That's not what I want to hear.
And you don't want to bombard everybody with your negative bullshit. Like, we all have our own negative. We all had our stuff. This is why I hate this whole thing and this PC culture about who's privileged and who's not privileged. I'll tell you this. I don't care who you are, what background you come from, what disadvantages you supposedly have in life. If you live your life from the perspective of, hey, I'm a victim constantly by other people, you will always and forever remain a victim. there are plenty of examples of people that did have it rough. And maybe, yeah, you could compare notes and say, hey, maybe that person had it a little rougher than that person. But I mean, why are we nitpicking? There's people out there that have no friggin' legs that are out there doing competitive basketball. They're doing art and calligraphy. They're creating music. And you're sitting there complaining. You got two legs and people are complaining about the fact they only had 3 hours sleep, yep, or they don't have enough money in the bank, or their girlfriend dumped them, or the world hates them. And you're like, there are too many examples of people who were not privileged at all, that rose above and became better and proved everybody wrong. But those people aren't focused on. People like, and the media is part of this too, the way we think our culture now, is we're programmed to focus on the negative.
Yep.
And think of our inner dialogue. Most of the noise in your head, most of the conversation you're having with yourself when you look in the mirror or you watch yourself on a friggin' podcast after, mm-hmm, or you're watching a training video of yourself or whatever. Anytime you have objectivity, it's very critical. You're like, oh, I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like this. And then when someone comes and fuels that and says, yeah, you didn't really look like you were doing too well with that. Even if 100 people lined up and said, you're amazing. You're amazing. You look great. You're awesome. You did awesome. One person teams up with your own voice and you're like, that's all I focus on.
Yeah.
You know?
And I've been in that rut where everything's negative life. And
it's a battle.
And it is a battle. And it's just fighting through that, being mindful, right? It's all that stuff, right? And yeah, I'm still stuck on how much BS you hear in a day from people. Oh, yeah. And I think it's just people want to hear their own voice too. They want to hear themselves complain.
Yeah. I think they're looking for validation.
Yeah, maybe.
They're looking for someone to walk up to them and say, oh, poor you. You've had it so rough.
So what in that situation? Okay. So you're sitting out and someone comes and tells you a story.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just use that sleep. I only slept 3 hours last night. Like, do you feel sorry for them?
No.
No.
Not for one second.
No. And so I always feel awkward in that situation. What is one supposed to say? I said,
I just go, shitty deal. And I walk away. What do you want me to say?
Or sometimes I say, oh, I had a great sleep last night.
Yeah. Or how about this? Someone walks up and they ask you, how's your day going? You're like, oh, it's awesome. Everybody kind of looks at you weird. You're not allowed to say that you're having an awesome day. Because then they're like, oh, look at you, cisgendered white male. You have it all good. Yep. Or whatever. It could be just anything. You work for yourself. Must be nice. You get to be on the beach today. You get to be doing podcasting today when I'm sitting here grinding it out at work and working my tail off. Must be nice. And you're like, do you know what kind of work, what kind of failure, what kind of financial hell I had to go to get to the point where I get to do what I love? You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. to do this, mm-hmm. it's unbelievable. I was not privileged. I was not. I had to go against every possible roadblock because the universe threw it at me. The minute I made a wish upon a star, so to speak, to say, I don't want to work a slave job anymore. I want to work for myself. I want to create amazing content. I want to make an impact in this world. I want to be successful. The minute I declared that, I feel like the universe or whatever the higher powers, they're just like, sure, no problem. All right. Here's all the gauntlets you got to run through. If you want that, this is the sacrifice it takes to get there. I'm not just going to hand it to you on a silver platter and walk up and say, here you go, Dave. You asked for it. So it's just, there's a Porsche on your front driveway. Like this whole The Secret shit, the way they talk about it, just nonsense. It's nonsense because it's like, it's overly focused on just some kind of material acquisition. Yeah. When like material acquisition should just be like a perk that comes from you being authentic and doing good work and having good value and going through the friggin' suffering that you're gonna have to go through to be successful.
That's funny. I worked for a company, and our Christmas gift from, I guess, the company was the book, The Secret, the book.
Oh yeah.
And like they wanted us to all, you know, take this, you know, a positive, you know, what's the motto of The Secret? It's like
positive mindset,
all this BS and
believe and achieve.
Yeah. So if you believe it, it'll come true. I'm like, so
believing's not enough.
No, it's not enough. You got to grind. You got to,
that's why
you
got to
sacrifice.
Yeah.
I don't think enough people sacrifice. Everybody wants it. Everybody wants to think if I believe it, it's going to come to me. So the whole silver, it's kind
of with no effort from my part.
No effort. There's effort in everything you do.
It's the effort that gives it any value.
Yes. It's a full life is a full-time job.
Yes.
It's a full yeah.
Well, you know what? I like the word I like saying work, right? Instead of job because I freaking hate jobs. Jobs to me is I'm signing off for a period of time to become you know, in a way I'm becoming enslaved for a bit, right? And we all do that. There's reasons why. Maybe you love your job. But you can still be free working in a job and you can look at it as a form of your work. But I feel like your work in this life, when we say the work that we're doing and my work is my constant personal development journey that I'm trying to add value to my life. And by doing that, adding value to other people's life. Like there's that sort of thing. So that your work is to discover your potential, find out why you're here living this life right now, find purpose. If you have no purpose, you're going to be one of those people that are checking out, right? So you got to have those things.
Yep.
That's what's going to motivate you to go through those mm-hmm. hard times that most people won't do. But those people that won't, they'll sit there on the water cooler and complain all the time, or they'll point out your successes and try to knock you down a few pegs the minute you rise up, oh, right? Those kind of people, it's the crab in the bucket thing, yeah. right? The crab tries to crawl out, all the other crabs pull them back in because there's this feeling of like, well, if you're going to be successful, you got to bring me with you. And I'm like, okay, but my being successful was purely based on, well, yeah. sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's you meet the right person, but I feel like in a way, you are creating through your intention and your mindset, you're creating some of these experiences. So in that sense, I understand what the secret's trying to get at, the whole thing. But the secret is a bastardized version of the older philosophy of what true connection to the universal force and the law of attraction, all of that is really supposed to be all about. So I'd say they just got half of it right. The first part of what you need to do is you have to have a vision. You have to have some kind of imagination. Like when we created this podcast and we kind of redid Truth Warrior and thought of our logo and kind of came up with the concept of it, I conceived of it in my mind and you conceived of ideas in your mind. And then we took those ideas with some good positive energy and we constructed something in the world, in the physical world, using the software and we're testing the mics and trying to get everything right, getting a better internet signal. Like there's those technical things, those action steps you have to take. So it's not just sitting there imagining all the time about some day when everything's perfect. You have an image that you then have to work at without complaining of when it fails and when it doesn't work. You have to constantly work at it and chip away at it every day to make it real in the world, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. You got to work at it. You got to put pen to paper.
You got to sweat. You got to cry. You got to be sad about it. You got to fail. You got to feel like you're going to give up. If you're doing any kind of project and you haven't yet felt that feeling like you want to give up, you're not doing it right.
Oh.
Because you're not working yourself hard. I mean, you're not pushing yourself hard enough. Like when I'm doing a round on the hand pads in kickboxing, right? And I'm, you know, it's been a long class and I'm tired. I know that in order to be better at it, I have to push past that barrier and that voice in my head that's saying, you're tired. Just sit down, relax. Just here, chill by the window. Why are you putting yourself through this torture? Your mind's going to do that to you. And you have to say somewhere in there, no, I'm going to push through this barrier so that I can increase my endurance mm-hmm. and I can get better at this. Mm-hmm. And it takes pain to forge anything worth having. Yeah. It's like, even I've spoken about this before, I got to watch my children be born, right? I was there. My second daughter, Sophia, was born in our house, on our bed. Like it took 45 minutes. It was crazy. And to watch the pain and suffering that it took to create life is sort of a stark wake-up call. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, I shouldn't be complaining about jack shit. And then when you see that they've calculated the odds of what it is to actually be alive in a human body, it's like 400 trillion to one, the odds that you even make it here. Like the making it into a body and living this life, even though everybody likes to complain about it and say, oh, the world is so screwed. Just to live, just to breathe and even have that thought, 400 trillion to one against you. You could win the lottery every day of your life. And you won't have odds like that.
That's crazy.
And yet here you are complaining about the fact that you just got 3 hours of sleep.
There's 7 billion of us?
Yeah.
That's
a lot.
That's a lot.
And I like Alan Watts' concept of how it's not like you're just born on the earth. The earth produces you. Like the earth peoples
people
the are. Way a tree apples in the fall. And if you think of it like that, maybe there's a lineup of souls to get in here that want to come in. And it's like, you got to get the golden ticket in order to come, you know? And then when we get here, yeah, there's all this chaos and all the horrors of the world, but there's also beautiful things too. There's great people. I mean, look, we're talking to a guy in Professor Almeida who's out there changing people's lives, inspiring people. We're trying to do that with this show. Yep. How many other great people are out there doing great work that came from really, maybe they came from a poverty stricken area, or they didn't have both their parents, or maybe they did come from being physically enslaved or in some war torn country. Or so just think of like all the horrible things that life could deal with you. And they decided to say, I'm not going to complain about it. I'm going to change my life and make it what I want, regardless of all of that. Mm-hmm. And they become the strongest, most inspiring people that do some amazing work that you'll ever hear about.
Yep.
You know, like all the great philosophers and writers and all these guys that founded these martial arts. I mean, none of them had it easy. That's why they were able to be geniuses. You can't just be a genius or create something amazing or be successful just magically, I guess, unless you're like Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian, where it's just kind of thrown to you. But those people are not happy. They're not real. They're not fulfilled. They have all the money and the lip injections and the cars and all that in the world, but they're not happy. They're not content with who they are. I don't know them personally, but I'm just sort of assuming based on what I've seen. And we know people like this that are like overly materialistic, overly focused on not what they think of themselves, but overly focused on what other people think of them.
What other people think.
And to me, that's my criteria for judging somebody's personality. If the majority of their conversation is about other people in sort of a negative, sort of like gossipy, judgy way, I know right away you're just projecting your own psychology. You're just it's psychological projection. It's just you're venting your own inner frustration about yourself and you're putting that on other people. You have no idea where those people came from and what they had to go through, you know? And if we started looking at each other like that and say, hey, I don't care what gender, race, or affiliation or religion you come from. I don't know what you've had to go through in your life. And I'm going to assume that you're going through your own challenges and you're at a different point in the journey maybe than I am. But let's just stop all this judgy victimization, woe is me. And for Christ's sake, can we stop teaching that to the kids in these universities, these millennials coming out with this sort of like air of, I'm owed something. You're owed nothing. Nobody owes you anything. You owe yourself. How about if we started thinking like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with that said, I wanted to do a little piece here. Oh, go
so
ahead.
Yeah. So I want, before we continue, you mentioned, and I think this was a big struggle for me.
Right.
You mentioned you have to find your purpose.
Right.
How does one find their purpose? Like it's not as simple as it sounds. Go find your purpose. It's not. So,
well, then your purpose is to find your purpose.
Yes.
That's the first purpose.
But so find your purpose, find your passion. How do we teach people how to find their passion? That it seems simple. It seems like, oh, I like books, so that must be my passion. But really, is it?
Right.
So how do you nail it down? How do you break it down? And maybe this will be my mission. I'm going to see if I can put it on paper. How did I do it? How did I get to it?
Right.
And I did talk to somebody. I did go to somebody and
that helps.
And they walked me through it.
Yeah.
In their steps. But for the lame person, how does one do it? It seems so simple, but when you actually break it, when you actually think about it, your mind goes a million different places.
Yeah.
And then you get frustrated with yourself.
Right. Right.
Like, I don't know how many times I thought I need to find, I'm going to spend the weekend to find my passion. This is what I'm doing this weekend.
Yeah. I'm going to make my dream board this weekend.
It's my vision board. Frustrating. It's.
No, I hear you. And I don't want to say like I have all the answers on it. I can only comment from my own experience and with working with people. And I learned a lot of this from martial arts and from reading philosophy and just thinking about it, is that I think when we're young, we're put in front of our teachers at school and our parents, and we're asked, what do you want to be when you grow up, Johnny? Like, that's the question we're asked right away. And that question comes from a virtue. It's designed to say, hey, start thinking about why you're here and what you want to do. But typically it's linked to a career of some kind. Typically it's like, well, don't you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or a Wall Street banker, or like, what do you want to be? You want to be an MMA fighter? What do you want to do? And as a kid, I think it stunts you in a way to think of it like that.
Television.
Right. Yeah. Because then exactly these kids they're not old enough really to have a conception right now of what they want to do when they're 16. I don't know what I want to, like, I'm 36. I don't know what I want to do when I'm 40. Maybe I don't want to do this anymore. Maybe I'm going to change. I don't know. I'm going to try it. But what I've always known throughout my life, for all the different things that I've done, I've worked in 50 different industries for jobs, trying to find something that I could tolerate to wake up in the morning and go to work. Then I realized, screw that. Nothing's really happening. I need to work for myself. I knew that I didn't know what it was I was going to do, but I just knew that I needed to command my own schedule. I needed to create something where I had time freedom, and I needed to do something that was exciting to me and that got me out of bed and that I would do even when I was not wanting to do it that day. And so when I went on my mission of finding out what my purpose was, I started to realize that my purpose isn't in the thing. It's not in my purpose is to be a martial arts instructor. My purpose is to start a podcast. My purpose is to, I don't know, move here or live there or visit here. My purpose became life. It became activating a philosophical perspective of life that says, am I happy with myself? Am I content with myself? Do I believe myself to be competent in life, regardless of the situation that I'm in? Could I be broke ass living off a park bench? And yeah, I wouldn't want to stay there, but would I be content with who I was? So my purpose became being authentic and being, finding out what it was that drove me to live. So for the first purpose is, what are you going to do so that you're not thinking of offing yourself? Like, keep like living and living vibrantly and fully is the first purpose. That's the ultimate purpose, is to say, my purpose isn't just what my job is. This is why when on the Unslaved podcast, Michael, he's using big words to describe this, but it's like he's looking for your vocation versus an occupation. So an occupation is just something you do to pass the time, some entertainment, whatever, play a board game or video games or go to a movie or whatever. But your vocation is your calling. And your calling, sometimes it doesn't hit people till they're in their 40s. Some people it hits them earlier. And it also changes kind of, you know, because there's you finding different ways of expressing you and the uniqueness that is you through different ways, right? Could be through different jobs, relationships, whatever you're doing, projects. So I feel like connecting to your passion is about connecting to your passion of life. So what lights you up about life? Ricardo Almeida was saying he loves surfing. That's kind of like his pastime. That lights him up. It connects him to nature. I talk to a lot of surfers too. Personally, for me, surfing's not really my, I'm not super like, oh, I got to surf every way. Like, I'm not into that, right? For other people, it could be something as simple as just going for a walk in the park or riding a bike. It connects you to life and it makes you feel good. From there, you capture that feeling and you go, well, where do I want to spend most of my time? What do I gravitate towards when I go to the library? What section of the library do I gravitate towards? Do I go more towards home and garden, comedy, history, philosophy? What am I gravitating towards? And I think that it just becomes a journey of you learning about yourself. And we all have to do this because we're taught so much to compare ourselves to other people and to listen to other people and to read other people's thoughts and to listen to other people's thoughts. Right? Most of it is other people's thinking.
The hardest thing is listening to yourself.
Exactly. So we don't take that time. I remember when we were shooting that video for our Patreon thing where we were down at the potholes by the waterfall and we were just saying how, wow, doesn't like being in a very powerful place like this just sort of like activate something in you? It switches you out of that cynical sort of mindset and it puts you in this place of like, wow, I just feel calm and at peace and I feel motivated. Right? When you're sitting in that place, you're not just motivated to go out and win the lottery. You're motivated to just, you're motivated in life. You're like, I feel good right now. I feel charged.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's, it's funny. Like, so we're going to plug Marco Polo. I think we should get shares in this company.
We should.
I was walking to work. And I turned up Marco Polo and started Marco Poloing you. And I just said, it was the day after Mike Barra. Is that the whole day we spent and we went to the beach and
did the other
recording. Fire talk and stuff. Yep. And I just felt like you woke up in the morning, you had a good sleep and woke up and I just felt alive. And I haven't been feeling like that there's certain times, but it's just this whole past month has just been alive for me. And it's been great. And when we talked about just the energy we have on this project that we're revamping and stuff.
Yep.
And it's just energy. You're just keeping that energy going and it's awesome.
I feel the same way. And it's funny because I mean, I've had the opportunity to feel that many times in my life. And that's what I would say you connect to right away. And we did it through building this project, but really it's not about the project.
No,
it's not about that. It's that you found something where you were like, I feel like I'm doing something of value and I feel like I'm being productive. So I think productivity is key to being human, right? If you're just kind of sitting there, you become like water that gets stale, right? But if you're moving towards a goal, and that's the thing, the goal could be anything. It's not about the goal. It's about the journey to the journey. Goal.
Yes.
That's what lights you up.
That's the most important part.
And I think that's why people, they think, oh, if I just had $20 million in the bank account, I'll be happy. No. But you won't. I mean, hey, and money can add some value to your life. But the thing is that it's not the only thing. It's not the only thing. Like, what was that quote by Waldo Emerson? Emerson wrote something beautiful about what success was. And he was like, success is to be respected in the eyes of young people, respected in the eyes of respectable people, to feel like you've made even one life easier just because you've lived, to feel like you're contributing. We all want to contribute something. If you're not contributing and being productive and having some kind of goal, you start to become stale. And that's what starts to produce all those psychological issues with people and the depression and the low self-esteem. We're going to be doing Sunday, actually. Oh my God, it's already Friday. So Sunday on the Unslave podcast, Michael and I are doing a whole show just on self-esteem. And we're going to get into all these areas because I think it's going to be impossible for anybody to connect to their purpose and their vision if they don't have a strong sense of self, if they don't have confidence, if they don't feel good about themselves. So you have to start there. And a lot of times your journey is going to be this battle. That it's just going to be an expression of the battle you're having inside of yourself. So that's why I kind of called this whole project Truth Warrior, is because the truth we're seeking is not just some truth about, you know, some point in history or some mystery. The truth is about who you are, why you're here, and where you're going, and how to find purpose. And you'll connect to that truth by looking objectively at other things and try to find the truth there. Like, we're trying to find the truth of how to make the best podcast, how to get the signals right, the mics right, the cameras right, getting all. We're trying to find the best way. When I'm teaching martial arts or training martial arts, I'm trying to find the truth in these techniques. What is what really is effective versus what's just in my head as being something that's effective. Mm-hmm. When you can take things out of your head and make them real, the feeling you're going to get from that, the feeling of climbing a mountain where you had to cry and sweat and climb and lose sleep and slip and fall. When you get to the top of that mountain, you're going to feel like a million. You're going to feel, I can't even use money to describe. You're going to feel like you've just conquered Olympus or something because of the struggle. So if you can't get through the struggle because you lack that self-knowledge, you'll never make it to that feeling of being successful. I don't care how much money you have or what you're doing in your life. You have to go through the gauntlet. You have to, like all the heroes in the hero stories. They go through the underworld cycle. They go through the antagonist, the villain is always the counterpart to the protagonist, the hero. And the villain is like, it seems to be designed to be the Achilles heel of the hero. So the hero is like this heroic character that's almost invincible, like Superman. And then someone finds the kryptonite. Mm-hmm. And that's the story of your journey. We're all on the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. And all of the challenges in your life and all the things that hold you back and make you want to blame everybody else and blame the world, that's your villain. That's your kryptonite. If you can beat that and find a way to overcome that, you'll hit that level of, oh my God, boom. Now, and then there, you're not, your mind is no longer absorbed in all the self-doubt and negative talk. It's now thinking of ideas like, oh, we could do this. Like every second day I'm Marco Poling. I'm like,
boy.
Dude, I just had this idea. We could do this. We could do that. Like that comes from true inspiration because there's no filter. There's nothing blocking that. If I was weighed down with all these security issues and like, oh my God, I'm stressed about money and I'm stressed about this and all these things, then I wouldn't be able to produce any of these ideas.
No.
So that's, I think, one thing is you start with the reason why you're here, and that's a journey. And that's why it's healthy to go and look at examples of people who've come from really tough spots in life and have actually succeeded in their area. Some of them you may never even have heard of. Some of them might be just the guy running the bakery up the store for you, the street from you. You don't even know what they've done to move here and to build that business and to do what they love. And so, yeah, this question of what it is to be successful and how to get there. And it starts with the purpose And finding the purpose starts with you finding the purpose as to why you're even breathing. Why is it worth it for you to keep this life going? Because we could all look at life very pessimistically and go, well, we're only here a short time. There's a million ways to die. I'm going to die eventually. What's the point? I might as well just get some instant gratification, have a couple Yahoo moments, and then die. Like, and then you start to realize, no, that mindset is going to put you in a place where you're just waiting to be dead. You're not actually living, you know? And so this is the stuff that I learned when I was going through periods of depression and self-doubt and trying to find my purpose, was I had to struggle with these questions. And the people that I talk to, we all go through this in some way, shape, or form. So I would just say to people, don't think like a victim. Mm-hmm. Think like a victor. Doesn't mean you're always going to win. Doesn't mean you're always going to succeed in all everything you do. But it means that you're never giving up. And when your time comes to leave this life, it will come. Don't sit there anticipating it. Don't sit there living your life worrying about dying or worrying about your fears. They will hold you back every step of the way. Live as if you are immortal. Live as if you are invincible. Live as if you are successful. Walk around right now as if you already have all that success financially that you want, or you already have everything you want. If you walk like that and know that, hey, one day when I do achieve those things, I can still be happy, then I know I'm on the right track. But if you find yourself going, hey, I've got all the success in the world, I've got all the money in the world, I've got all the access to anything I want in the world, and I'm depressed as shit, you missed something. Meanwhile, if you're somebody who doesn't have a lot of financial privilege in the world, you can be equally as depressed, and not just because of the financial aspect. It's just, it's all about your mindset and where you're sitting, you know? And so I wanted to sort of talk about this because it's been some realizations I've been having over the past few years of redefining what success was. And when I made the step to become an entrepreneur, I said this, I said to my wife, I said, I want to be a successful entrepreneur, because it's the same to me as being a successful black belt or a successful father or a successful human being or a good communicator. It's a measurement for where I've achieved a certain level of value in my life and expression. So there's this sort of, we were talking off air about how there's this sort of like, what do you call it? There's like a cliche when it comes to the concept of money and making money. And any people might even be looking at this and go, hey, why are you now doing this Patreon thing? And why do you charge subscriptions to Unslaved? And why do you charge money for your programs and all that kind of stuff? And it's just sort of like, I guess it's like this sort of hippie mindset that says everything should just be free. You should just volunteer for everything. There should be no money. Money's evil. Everything's evil unless it's given freely. It's this altruistic sort of like almost like socialistic idea of the world. And I gotta speak to that, because when it comes to say something like money, there's sort of two ways you can look at it. One way is the sort of age-old axiom that money is the root of all evil. And if you look at that, and let's, we're using money, guys, but we could apply this to a lot of different areas, okay? But we'll use money because we're talking about that. So like the idea that money is the root of all evil, it's kind of like, to me, like saying that guns are the root of all killing. Like guns in themselves, this thing called a gun is the root of all killing. Yeah, it's a device that can kill, okay? But it's like to say that, well, having the right to self-defense, or having, I'm a martial artist, I'm learning combat, I'm learning how to hurt somebody if I have to, that's evil because it ends up hurting somebody. But you go, well, no, but there's so many positive things to martial arts. And I know a lot of people that own and use firearms that are some of the best people I've ever met. Sure. And they would get your back if anything ever went down. You know what I'm saying? They use it for hunting or farming or just think about it. Like, you have that ability. So I look at money the same way. It can be a tool for destruction, which it has been, and it's been corrupted, and so many people have abused it. It can be something that pulls towards your ego that says, hey, the only way you're going to find happiness is if you have some money. But what if I told you that that was not the original conception of what money is? And it doesn't have to be the only conception of that. And even in this corrupt financial system that we find ourselves, you do not have to operate in the market with that mindset. And as an entrepreneur, you don't have to operate your life thinking, well, I really did teach that yoga class and do a good job, and I really inspired those people, and I feel guilty for taking money in return. So really, it's not about the money. It's about you feeling like you're not worthy for any kind of success or reward for your efforts or fair exchange of value for value. You feel so self-immolated inside that you're saying, the only way I'm going to fulfill my life is if I'm always giving. Always giving is the source of happiness. This is the whole Judeo-Christian sort of mindset. If I'm always giving, if every cake that I bake is only for the other people around me to enjoy and not for me to take a piece and go, man, that's a damn good cake. I love this cake. Good job, man. Like, if I can't have that moment, if I can't have anything that I produce that is also affecting my life as well as other people, then I feel like you're the furthest away from a spiritual understanding of life. And I'm not trying to say, like, I have to break it down. I've got some quotes I'm going to read, but I don't know. Give me your thoughts on that, Ryan. Like, what's your mindset about money and success in that sense?
Yeah. So, I struggle with it. I mean, being a computer guy.
Yeah.
Right, everybody wants everything done. My computer's broken. Can you fix it? Because you know how to fix it. I'm a nice guy. I do it. And they're like, oh, I'm going to give you money. I'm like, no, I don't want money. I feel bad for charging you. I should be giving. I should be that person that just does it for you because I'm a nice guy.
Right.
And for my close inner circle, of course, everything, I do something for you, do something for me. That's the way it works. But just, you know, our acquaintances that, oh, you know computers. I always struggled. This is my time. How do I say I need money? And it was a huge struggle for me. Or give me something in return. Cause I'm not just doing this for free. I'm giving you a service. I'm giving you value.
Right.
And you're giving me nothing. You're not my best friend. You're not giving me any insights when I'm fixing your computer. You're over my shoulder saying, hurry up.
You get a high five and a thank you. And that's it.
Yeah. So, and for years I struggled with that. And when I started Unslate, I didn't want anything from you.
And I had to talk you into me paying you for that.
I didn't want zero. I wanted absolutely. And then me hanging out with you more and us getting closer. And you've completely changed the way I run my life now.
Oh, wow.
So I'm glad. And you've done the same with my wife or your wife and my wife, right? Same idea, right? And it's looking at it. It's looking as a tool. Money is a tool. It's not, don't feel bad to ask for money. Or if you don't, you know, if you're doing.
Or if you're not doing money, maybe to just at least get a fair exchange.
Exactly. I'm all for you do something for me. I do something for you. And if it's equal value.
Great.
That's the way.
Win-win.
That's the way. If I, you know, my grandpa used to, you know, give eggs. He had tons of chickens. Give eggs to somebody and he'd get meat in return because he didn't have any cattle at the time. So we gave eggs, you know, so it was completely fair exchange, right?
Right. Now, and the only thing about that is I've had people say, oh, well, we should go back to just bartering. But the problem with that is bartering is incredibly inefficient.
It is.
Because let's look at it like this. Okay, so say the only unit of measurement of value that you have to offer me is tomatoes.
Yep.
Okay, so you're a tomato farmer. You got tomatoes in plenty. You're a wealthy tomato guy. And I'm
not a huge, I don't really like tomatoes.
Potatoes.
Yeah. Well, I love potatoes.
Okay, there you go. Potato. You're a potato farmer. You got all the best potatoes in town. And you just got potatoes like coming out of your ears, all right? But when I come to you and you say, okay, well, I want a cow. So in exchange for a cow, I'll give you this many potatoes. Mm-hmm. But I'm sitting there going, dude, I also grow potatoes. I got tons of potatoes. I don't really need that. It's not valuable to me.
Exactly.
So if I give up my cow, I would have to be like a super, super nice guy only. And it would be a situation where it's not a win-win. It's a win-lose because I'm losing something that I value. So in order for me to give it to you, I mean, I do have to take care of myself, my family, and make sure my farm is successful. So potatoes are just not going to really cut it. And you're like, well, I don't really have anything else to give you. Then I'm kind of going to have to say, well, then I guess the deal's off. Unless I just feel like maybe you're my buddy and you've got me in the past, you've got my back in the past, then maybe I'll be generous, charitable. But
then you're an asshole.
And then is it really helping you for me to always be doing favors all the time? And like, does the universe operate like that? Does the universal force operate like that? No, it's give and receive, push and pull, give and take, equality, yin and yang. You can't, if you're the kind of person that's just like, well, I'm just going to give all the time. I'm a saint. I'm a Gandhi. I'm a Mother Teresa. And I got my opinions on those individuals, but like, let's just put that aside. of this altruistic concept that says, I'm just going to give even the shirt off my back to a stranger. That's heralded as being a virtue in our society. And there's times when that could be virtuous. But how does anybody feel in a relationship? Let's do it like this, okay? So you're in a relationship, you're in a marriage or a friendship. And you're the person that's always doing all the housework, all the giving, all the love, all the compliments. You're the one that's just really engaged. And the partner you're with does none of that stuff for you. Are you in a fair situation?
No.
Well, how come people stay in those relationships?
Because they think it's, they think they're doing the right thing.
Right. But also they probably have a little bit of Stockholm syndrome and, beaten wife syndrome in a way that says, I don't have enough self-esteem. I don't value myself.
Yep.
I have no value of myself. So therefore, I will only give. That when I hear people that talk like that, I see that. I don't see this virtuous Jesus Christ character. I see a person that is very sad and that is missing any kind of self-worth. Because if you have self-worth, you're not going to walk around and lord that over people and try to get an unfair advantage over people. But you know, for example, with your computer, how much money, time, and energy did you spend to gain the skills that you have? How many years did you put into learning what you know?
A lot.
So if I come to you and I say, hey, Ryan, come and hook me up with this, my podcast, okay? I want you to do all the work. I want you to answer all the emails. I want you to build everything from scratch. And I'm going to give you nothing in return. Because, man, you're just a nice guy and I expect a favor here. After a while, where's your incentive? Are you going to be up excited in the morning to contribute to something that you're not really getting anything out of it?
No.
Other than your all that time, energy, and money you committed to learning the skills that I don't have, that I didn't do, you're just going to give them to me freely with zero return. You're going to get to a point, I don't care who you are. You could be Jesus Christ himself. You're going to start resenting me after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to start resenting the work, and the work is going to get less and less, and you're not going to feel passionate about what you're doing because we're designed as human beings. Think of hunter-gatherers. To go out and produce and to come back with something. Like if I'm going to go out and feed my family, I'm going to go out, kill the gazelle or kill the whatever or forage or whatever, and I'm going to bring that back to provide. That's where I feel good. And then, yeah, when I have lots, I'll give. I'll be more generous. Like we have that dynamic as well. But I feel like it's extreme. And so this was also voiced a lot by the philosopher Ayn Rand, who everybody has their opinion on. And I definitely have my opinion about her work. And you may not agree with everything she said, but when it comes to this subject, if you can understand what she meant when she was talking about what a free market is, what money actually is, what value is, what self-esteem is, and we're going to cover that more on Sunday with Michael, you'll have a different perspective on this whole thing. Okay. So let's look at a few concepts here. So when we think of money right now, we think of Federal Reserve System, fiat banking currency, you know, international banking cartels, crime, mafia, you know, people killing people for money, Wall Street, big corporations ripping people off. We think of like, you know, countries invading other countries and stealing resources and just because they're greedy and they just want all the money. That's the image we get. And the reason that's the only image we get is because that's the only image that's given most of the time in the media and in our society to people that are successful. Okay. But the argument is, what did it take to actually produce wealth, to actually produce abundance? No, it didn't take money. Money was a unit of exchange, right? A measurement system. It was the effort of the people. It was the effort of the people that put their mind to work and took from their imagination and put it into physical reality. Like, think of the guys that built bridges the first time to connect people together. Like, how much time, energy, work, resources does it take to build a bridge? Are you going to expect people to go out and build bridges for no return at all? And what if I'm building a bridge, and once again, what you have to offer in exchange is just not valuable to me? How can we create a win-win? So what we did was we invented this concept of money, which it used to be backed by gold or some kind of precious metal. Like today, it's like fake.
Yeah, it's all printed. Digital.
Yeah, it's printed. It's I hate that. I want to reform that. But technically, money cannot function as real money or as a medium of exchange unless it is backed by actual unconsumed goods. So it has to have value. And it has to be an efficient way that we can work this value for value exchange. Okay. So I'm just going to read a quick quote for you guys. All right. And let me know what you think in the comments. Don't Don't worry, you can disagree with me, whatever you want to do. But there's one way of looking at money just in this context that I think a lot of people maybe don't consider. And that is that money rests on the axiom that every man is the owner of his mind and his effort. Money allows no power to prescribe the value of your effort except voluntary choice of the man who is willing to trade you his effort in return. Money permits you to obtain for your goods and your labor that which they are worth to the men who buy them, but no more. Money permits no deals except those to mutual benefit by the unforced judgment of the traders. So long as men live together on earth and need means to deal with one another, their only substitute if they abandon money, and money in the concept that Rand is talking about, not what we have now. Okay, just got to put that in there. So if we abandon money, we're replacing it with the muzzle of a gun. So that means that what ends up happening is that if we just start, and this has just been proven out in the history of communism and socialism every time, 150 million deaths to its name, destroyed every country and economy it's ever even shown a glimmer of in, is that if there's no way of measuring what value is and having something that's a universal trading system, so like to the farm example, maybe I don't want potatoes, but you could pay me for the cow so that I could take that unit of measurement that should be backed by something that's like gold or whatever. I can take that unit of measurement and then I can go and buy whatever I need for my farm. Mm-hmm. I get to pick what I want. I don't have to be forced to take potatoes. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I have a way of doing it. Okay. So we're talking about an uncorrupted form of a unit of exchange, right? So she says that most people lump together into the same category all men who become rich, refusing to consider the essential question, the source of the riches, the means by which the wealth was acquired. Money is a tool of exchange. It represents wealth only so long as it can be traded for material goods and services. Wealth does not grow in nature. All right? She's talking about wealth in the sense of the product of our thinking that produces us to work and create something new, right? Because like bridges didn't just show up in nature, right? And build and all the things we have. The internet didn't just show, like it was people putting their minds to work to create something that benefited the whole human race and moved us out of the jungle and out of the dark ages, okay? So she's saying money is a tool of exchange, represents wealth only so long as it be traded for material goods and services. Wealth does not grow in nature. It has to be produced by mankind. Nature gives us only the raw materials, but it is man's mind that has to discover the knowledge of how to use them. It is man's thinking and labor that transform the materials into food, clothing, shelter, or television sets or whatever, into all the goods that men require for their survival, comfort, and pleasure. Behind every step of humanity's long climb from the cave to New York City, there is a man who took that step for the first time, the man who discovered how to make a fire or a wheel or an airplane or an electric light. And when people refuse to consider the source of wealth, what they refuse to recognize is the fact that wealth is the product of man's thinking, of his creative ability, fully as much as art, science, philosophy, or any other human value. So the idea is that in a truly free market, which we've never really seen, we've gotten the closest to it possible with this American experiment. Okay, with the free market idea, we got close to it. Okay, but to truly have a free market, which is unregulated by and intervened by the government, right? You have an ability to work freely with other human beings and to become traders together. So we're trading services. We're trading energy. Even in a relationship, guys, you're trading currency with that person. And the moment one person feels deficient in love and affection and compliments, they're feeling like they're getting cheap. They're getting the cheap end of the stick. Gypped, yeah. Getting gypped, right? So money is just a representation that we created, just like numbers are something we created to measure reality, to measure that value. And to say, all right, it's a way we can come together instead of just coming and forcefully stealing goods and services at the muzzle of a gun, which was all of history, or a sword, or an army coming in to steal it. And the thing is that I get it. Like, we have so many examples of people that abuse power, abuse money, but we forget about the fact that we have amazing people that have done great things with these things as well. Mm-hmm. And that when you're out there defining what success is, it shouldn't be determined on what kind of money you have in your bank account. But you could look at the money you have in your bank account as being a representation of the amount of value you have given. And then you take that and you do good with it in your life for your family. And then, yes, be charitable, give back to your community, help inspire others. And so my method of being an entrepreneur was to say, okay, I don't want to build something where I'm just the only one making money. I don't want it to be exclusive to me, David Whitehead. I want to build something where I get to teach other people how to be successful the way I've been successful. It's kind of like I didn't just learn jiu-jitsu and martial arts just to benefit my own life. That's how it starts. But now I teach martial arts to others. And yes, I charge money for my time. And that money is an equivalent of the value that I invested in becoming an expert in this field. And then it helps me get better equipment. We just bought some new punching bags thanks to the money that we've been making. So now we can offer even a better product with our Patreon page and this whole concept of having like, you choose what you pay. If you think we're worth $1 a month it is. If you think we're $25 a month, here, we'll give you some extra incentives and rewards. But it's like a choose your own adventure. It's a true free trade situation. And the moment you don't like it, you're not on any contracts. I don't like contracts. I don't like, looking at the way they've set up the tax system and all that. That's all corruptions. The true should be, no, if you're getting that value and it's equal, we're win-win all the time. Win-win, win-win. You win, I win. You win, I win. Not I win, you lose. Or I win and you win a little bit. That's where you're getting gypped. And that's the way that the system got corrupted. So regardless of how the system stands, my final thing on this is be the change you want to see. Where do you spend your money? Who do you support? What are you investing in? Are you out there creating value in the world? And is this hatred that you have towards money and success and all that really based on the fact that you see all these examples of corruption that you could bring up to me? Or is it based in the fact that you have resentment because you couldn't do what it takes to make something come from your imagination and your genius that we all have, that universal force we can tap into and make it fit and go through the trials and the pain and the suffering and the mistakes and the failures to make it something tangible in the real world that's a consumable good or service that will add value to someone else's life? Mm-hmm. Is it because you're resentful that you can't do that? And so all you see is examples of people that are doing it, and it's easy for you to say, screw them. They're all a bunch of Ebenezer Scrooges. They don't give a shit about the world. They're all a bunch of wealthy psychopaths that just stomp on the skulls of everybody they step on. When the fact of the matter is, yeah, sure, those people exist, but they've existed in any system we've created, and there are that many more examples of people that have done so much to bring true wealth to people, like not just money, but like wealth, a wealthy life, a wealthy mindset. And I believe they deserve to get rewarded for what they've done. Like how many guys, we brought up guys like Walter Russell and Nikola Tesla and all these great, brilliant minds. They got gypped in history. They brought change to the world and wealth to the world that people could never even imagine. And they just got tucked away in a closet and someone else stole that and made money off their stuff, right? Like everybody's talking about Elon Musk. Very people are talking about Nikola Tesla, right? So those men, in my opinion, with what they created, deserved to get as much wealth and success as they possibly could have. But it was the corruption that stole that from them. Mm-hmm. And now they're forgotten in the pages of history.
Yep.
So to change that, we have to be the change. And so that's sort of my money rant. There's much more to it, but that's kind of where I'm coming from on that.
Am I 100% agree with you? But I'm going to be devil's advocate here. You know, and everybody always says, be the change. You just do it.
Right.
But how does one just do it? Like, how does the average person that thinks they need money to be successful,
right,
say I want to take this idea that's in my head and I want to do it, but I don't have time. But you're just telling me just do it,
right?
But how? But I don't have the time, I don't have the means, I don't have this, I don't have that. That's what's going through the average person's mind, right?
Yep.
They see that person that has money, that's successful,
can't do
that's
that.
Telling you
yeah
to do this, just do it,
right?
But I can't just do it. I got kids, I got a mortgage to pay.
Yep.
I got car payments.
Right.
I got to pay for my TV because we all have to watch TV. I have to pay for, I'm just using in general.
Exactly. Right? I'm just kidding. Yeah.
All this stuff, right?
Yep.
So how do I have time for any of this? How do I have money to do any of this? That's what, you know, when you see that successful person telling you just do it. I always thought that, well, how the hell am I? I got to pay a mortgage.
Right.
And,
well,
but you know, I've worked my way through that, but there's so many people that can't, that
right.
are just stuck, that just can't figure it out.
Well, here's my question to that then. Why is that? really, why is that? Like, okay, so there's the excuses, right? Yep. I'm just saying for the example, right? Yeah, yeah. So there's the excuses to say, well, fine and good for him. He must have had the time. He must have had some privilege.
He doesn't
have kids. He doesn't have kids. Yeah. Maybe they do, though. You know,
So
it's easy to sit there and go, well, but I can't because of my current situation right now is that I got to work 60 hours a week, slaving away, getting taxed 40% of my income. I got all these things with my kids. I don't have time to create something like that, right? I don't even have the idea. But you got to sit there and go, well, everything you just said was a negative point mm-hmm. on what your potential yep. is. And let me ask you this. What if that person that became successful and wealthy and is now trying to teach you how to do it, to free yourself, to truly achieve freedom in every sense, okay? So freedom is not just up in la la land in your imagination, in your dream state. Freedom can also exist in the physical world as well, okay? So what if that person went through even more struggle to change their schedule, to get up extra early, to go to those seminars, to not watch Netflix one night and instead to absorb some webinars where you're getting taught some actual valuable tools, or sign up at a martial arts program to get a little bit stronger, read a book, listen to a really sick podcast. If you're the person that is only sitting there saying all the reasons why you can't do it, you will always remain there. Mm-hmm. And I just got to tell you flat out, I've had the fortunate opportunity to work with and learn from some of the most amazingly inspired entrepreneurs I can imagine. I'm going to bring them on the show and I'm going to introduce them to you. You're going to see that they're legit and they're not out to grab your money and be corrupt. They're good people that want to teach you how to become wealthy as well. And when individuals in society can become wealthy mentally, physically, spiritually, materially, emotionally, in every way, they will then inspire the rest of the culture and community around them to do the same. And everybody benefits from that. Okay. So what you have to do is chip away at your limiting belief systems that you can't. I get the same excuses, by the way, from people that tell me why they can't show up to train class. Mm-hmm. So they're paying me a monthly membership. And they're like, look, man, I got soccer. I got this. I got this. And then I see them out the bar on the weekends. I see them coming home. I see them spending money on things that aren't healthy for them. I see them, wasting time, not using. So they're telling me they don't have time. Most people are wasting their time. So you got to say, well, how bad do you want this? Whatever it is. You want to be good at martial arts? You're going to have to make time. That's just, it's a requirement. You can't have a vision of something and a goal and then just go, well, because of my current situation that I'm not willing to change, I will never get to that goal. Well, that means in order to get to that goal, you have to change your current situation. So here's my quick story. I had a desire to become an entrepreneur. I was working 50 hours a week as a help desk guy, working for a software company that develops software for retirement homes. Okay. I was making good money, but I wasn't happy doing that job. And I had this dream of like, oh, if I could do something I loved, if I could have time freedom, if I could just pick up and go whenever I wanted, I feel like I'd be more successful because I would love it. I would be passionate about it. Right. How do I get there? I don't have time. That was my thing. And I don't have the money to start something. I don't know. I don't know business. I don't know what to do. So bit by bit, I started to listen to things and listen to speakers and read books that slowly started to change my mind about that and say, you don't have to start cold turkey, quit your job, risk your whole financial situation in order to become successful. You can start by taking some time out of the things that you're doing to just waste time. Yep. And apply that time more efficiently. So I'm a martial artist, so I'm always looking what's the most efficient way to do it without wasting energy. So I looked at my life, and a lot of people don't know this, but when you actually write down how you spend your day, how you spend your week, and then how you spend your month, and you add up the money you spend on coffees and going out and going with your friends and the subscriptions that you have to things like Netflix and all this and your TV cable, and you start really doing an honest analysis, every single person I've worked with is shocked at where they're wasting time, money, and energy. It's shocked. It's like, they're like, well, I didn't even think that I was wasting that much time. And then I go, well, now do you have time? Now do you, like, if the motivation is strong enough, now do you have time? Mm-hmm. Now that maybe you've freed up some financial resources to invest in something that will help you, to invest in courses or to whatever you need to do. Maybe when you look at your grocery bill and you look at the majority of the things you've bought at the grocery store over the past day, week, and month, where are you spending that money? Is it helping you with your health? Are you always sick? And you're thinking that, yo, I eat fine. But when you really look at it, you're like, oh, Jesus, that's why.
Yeah, I think what the issue is in today's society is that everybody wants instant gratification.
They
don't want to take that time to figure this shit out, right?
That's why people want everything to be free. That's the truth. That's the truth nobody wants to talk about. That's why they want to bring in a social utopia where we're just singing in Kumbaya. That's bullshit. This stuff doesn't just happen magically. This podcast did not just rise up out of the ether and happen. And success that I have gained in my life in every way, not just money, but any success I've had, it didn't just happen magically. It wasn't just given to me. But because we have all this social security from the government and we've got all this like rewards for this and that, and like nowadays you can sit at home and do nothing, you can get paid, right? Instant gratification, download the app, fast food drive through, everything's instant.
Okay, like started.
I didn't hook up an interview with Ricardo Almeida just because I'm like, just magically
you're
able
to. Motherfucker.
I'm a persistent motherfucker. I work hard at what I do. I love what I do. I've got experience now about how to do this stuff. And it happened because of my effort. So let's ask this. Does everybody else around you have the right to steal from you?
Absolutely not.
You would not allow someone to come in your home and just go, hey, bum on the street, I feel so sorry for you. I don't have any change to give you, but I'll tell you what, I'll leave my back door open. And anytime you want, there's beer in the fridge, get the food, come in. I don't care if my kids are running around, just come in my house at any time and take it, because everything's free. And this system's just designed to keep everything from being free. And now that guy's not going to do jack shit to earn that. Cause you're like, well, he just needs to eat. But you're like, but he's just sitting on the side of the road drinking all that money away. Dude, I'm just saying this in this example. Okay. So you're giving to somebody who's going to take advantage of you, and you're not going to open up your own home for that. It's kind of like my argument about why we need to protect our borders, and we do have to have borders. You have borders around your home protecting your family because you don't want just every animal walking through your house, taking a dump on your carpet. You don't want every person walking in just taking your shit every time. And you're like, yeah, it's all free, man. It's all free. No. It's about justice.
Yeah. And there's a time and place to be charitable though, right? Like you
100%. Yeah. 100%. But here's the thing, does charity work?
I don't think it does.
Well, we've been given billions of dollars to all these third world countries. Are they shaping up?
Has anything changed?
No, they've gotten worse.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people have gotten rich in a criminal way. Not getting rich in a true way and not really helping people, but like, you know, we've seen the worst side of human beings when it comes to these charitable organizations, not the best, unfortunately. Like look at some of these huge movements in history, like the, you know, back from like the 60s and 70s and like the whole Rainbow Child thing. And then like all these rock bands that were like, hey, charity for people in Africa, blah, blah, blah. Billions and billions and billions. Where are they going? They're going to these African warlords that are training child soldiers. They're going to these corrupt regimes that are destroying their country and not progressing.
Why did it get to that? Like, why does it, so these people are doing the right, in their minds are doing the right thing, making, you know, or raising money for.
Right. It comes from a virtue. They want to help, of course.
Does it end up with the warlords or with the corrupt government in Africa or wherever
because
it might be?
Good intentions are not enough. It's not enough to have good intentions. This is not how this world and this reality operates, to just go, I had the best of intentions. It doesn't matter. You could have the best of intentions and the result could be catastrophic, and you could still sit there and claim I had the best of intentions, but you ended up being a part of some evil shit that you didn't even really think about. See, because it has to be practical. It has to work. Yeah.
And you know what grosses me out is when I had some lady come to my door yesterday or 2 days ago, and she was raising money for a new cancer research.
Mm.
And she wanted a donation. But her pitch was so scripted, was so sales pitchy, used car salesman, that it was, why would I give you money? Like, right. It's got to come from if I'm going to give something, if I'm going to give my hard earned money, right?
You're taking it from your family's future.
Yeah, and I want to
give it to a
random person. You better tell me a hell of a story.
Yeah.
And it better come from the heart.
But some people would say, Ryan, you're such a cold, calculated Ebenezer Scrooge.
And this is the thing. I close that door and I feel fucking guilty. Why do I feel guilty? Right. I shouldn't feel guilty. You just told me a bullshit story.
Yeah.
Right? And it's probably, you know, the research is probably needed and they probably need money for this research. I get that. But don't send people that are slimy or that don't, it's not coming from the heart.
Right.
It's just not going
to. Exactly. And
they're making money, but it has to be working. Like, is it because people just feel guilty and they just need to give?
Well, that's
exactly what it is,
that's
right?
What charities
yes.
do.
So,
well, speaking of charities, remember we had that talk about, remember all these days? The days. Okay. So there's all these days. There's a, I don't know how many thousand days.
4,000
something
or,
days.
Yes,
okay. And these are the days like, you know, International Hijab Day or International Sickle Cell Day or Women's Day or Breast Cancer Day or this day. When you go and look up the origin of where those days are actually formulated from, they're not just pulled out of the ether most of the time. They come from UNESCO, the UN, and many other international organizations. Okay. So my question is, okay, they're kind of playing on our heartstrings there. They're like, oh, give to these poor. And they show you the pictures of the kids and the flies are flying around and there's no food and all this stuff. And they're like, well, look at you living in the West, you greedy pigs. You've stolen all the wealth of the world and created your civilization. And now look at them. They're all suffering and dying because you're successful. That's bullshit. You know why it's bullshit? Because the Western countries are the most charitable countries on the planet Earth. The most charitable. All the money comes from America, Canada, Western countries to go help these countries for years, 70 years. Hasn't changed one little iota. Maybe a couple people has helped them. Maybe there's been a few things. But in all, like, it's just the poverty's
in
worse.
The scheme of things.
Scheme of things is getting nothing, worse. No. Why? Because the governments and the social structure in these countries has not changed. So the money's going there, but they're all socialist countries. They're run like that. They're not run like free market capitalist countries. They're not run like that. Even, and sadly, America is, and Canada definitely not anymore. But we're still far better off in that regard. They're run essentially to bring all that wealth and money to the governments that then what do they do? They're all a bunch of corrupt. Why do you think it's like that?
Yeah.
You have bad leadership. And then there's good people that live in these countries that want to come and be successful. And many of them do come here and become very successful and they do very well. But the key is like this idea of just giving money away is a Band-Aid solution. Just like we were also talking about cancer. There was a little video there that I was talking about how there was a study that was done. And there's been many studies to show this, that the way we've treated cancer and all the money that you donate to these cancer charities, all the marathons you run and all that goes towards what? Goes towards the pharmaceutical industry and researching the same way they've been addressing cancer for 47 years since whatever Nixon declared a war on cancer. It's the same protocol. Chemotherapy,
all that money
radiation.
Goes to fight their lawsuits.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Chemotherapy, radiation. So they haven't, all the money we've sent hasn't had them come up with a better idea to go, you know what? Maybe all these studies showing that chemotherapy radiation has like an 80 to 90% failure rate. Okay. Maybe we should change the way we do things. Maybe we should listen to some of these alternative guys. Maybe we should do some more research into vitamin C and cannabis oil and God knows what else. There's been so many other ways of treating cancer, right? Nope, they don't change the protocol. All the money goes to continue researching something that has a failure rate that if any other product on earth had that kind of failure rate, like if your phone, if 97% or 80% of the phones that went out from Apple started exploding in people's faces, that company would be sued.
Yeah.
It would be shut down. We'd be like, hey, yeah, your phones are crap. They're killing
people.
Look
what almost happened with Samsung when their Samsung Notes or which the 8s or whatever, their batteries are blowing up.
Right.
Like that almost, it didn't almost destroy them, but that put a huge freaking, that was a massive hit.
That was
Samsung.
A brutal, yeah.
Yeah.
And like, oh, and then another thing was like, there's these little, when I was growing up, my daughter Avery, we got this thing called a Bumbo seat. Okay. So it's like this little rubber plastic seat with, it has no back on it. Okay. And you put your infant in the seat, 1 year old, whatever, and it helps them balance and learn core strength or whatever, right? And these were super popular, okay? One kid fell on a hardwood floor on the side and suffered brain damage, okay? Fell from this bumble because there's no support,
sure,
right? So one kid falls, the parenting community goes absolutely insane. We need to recall every bumbo seed in the world. We need to burn them in the fires of Hades.
Are you fucking kidding? I didn't have a fucking car seat when I was running around in the back seat of my car.
Yeah. I was wrestling my brother in the back of our station wagon on our way to Toronto when we were driving. No seatbelt. So, like, you're in Manitoba. We're on the back of tractors, rolling up. We're a bunch of farm kids. And here we are. A kid falls out of bumble seat. Tragic event. Okay,
yes,
sure.
Feel sorry for the kid.
But,
yes,
God, I mean, in regular chairs, shit happens. You could have your kid strapped in like they're ready to get blasted to the moon, and the whole chair tips over, someone brushes it, and the kid falls and bangs their head. That could happen.
But, why the hell are we banning cars? Why the hell we aren't, you know, like...
Well, this guy that drove over all these people in Toronto recently.
Yeah.
Are they going to go and ban vans?
Yeah.
Because it was a rental van.
It was a rent in so a white...
White rental van. Yeah. It was a racist van.
Yeah.
So are we going to ban white rental vans now because of that? Right? So these reactions happen because the media knows how to play on fear. And then there's money that's made by corrupt motherfuckers because of this, because of our ignorance. And nothing changes. It just gets worse. So let me ask you this. If we're going to do that for one bumbo seat incident, and we're going to have like this full recoil on the whole thing, when you have a system of treating a cancer that's ravaging the planet to the point where now it's like 1 in 4, 1 in 5 people in the West have cancer, okay? It's gotten worse, not better. All the billions of dollars and all the marathons and stuff and the ribbons for this and the days for that, push-up challenges and ice bucket challenges, just getting worse because they're not treating the root cause, just Band-Aids and publicity and marketing. We're going to be all up in arms about some kid falling out of a bumble seat and have recalls on the whole product, and put that company through the legal system, why wouldn't we do it with the cancer industry that has a failure rate of 80 to 97% for 47 years straight and has made nothing but $1 trillion off of death and destruction from their product?
Because they have the biggest companies behind it, right?
Exactly. So that is a great example of people that are using money inefficiently and in a corrupt, bad way. But I happen to work with and know an award-winning cellular microbiologist that came out of the pharmaceutical industry, and he was inventing kits and test kits for diagnosing diseases. Okay. His name is Dr. Myron Wentz. You should check him out. He's a great guy. And he came out of that industry saying, hey, we're not treating people. We're not treating the cause of all this degenerative disease going around. We are just putting Band-Aids on it. And there's all these people making all this money off something that's not working. So he went in and started getting into micronutrients and understanding, you know, what supplementation can do and how to build up an immune system and how health starts at the cellular level, and you need a certain amount of antioxidants and micronutrients, et cetera. And like, look at the diet of the average American or Canadian, look at the lifestyle, look at the amount of stress we're under, and all that stress equals oxidative stress. So therefore your body becomes more prone to degenerative disease. So he was saying we need to do a preventative approach. And so he spent all of his money in building labs and inventing these, working with supplements and working with all these different things to create something that actually works synergistically at the cellular level and helps inspire health and builds your immune system. So that's somebody that saw the corruption of somebody using their money badly and their success badly and their influence badly. And he did the opposite of that. He came out of it. He created something that does help with these things. And that's where he's putting his money. There's many people that have done these things, and even in the alternative world. And yeah, they should, of course, they're successful and they make lots of money doing what they do. But I feel like in that sense, that's justified because it's actually going towards the root cause, and they are actually producing value with their products and their services, mm-hmm. right? So I think it's an overall mindset that we're sort of suffering from right now, where it's like, you know, because of the instant gratification thing we were talking about, people want an instant solution to every problem. So if a company can come up and say, hey, I've got an instant solution for you, even if it's bullshit, people are willing to go towards that instead of the people that are like, look, I have a solution for you, but it's a little more long term.
And it takes work.
It takes some work, a little bit of effort. You got to change your lifestyle. You have to change your sleeping and eating habits. You maybe got to stop drinking so much. Then you're like, oh, you know what? It takes work. Everything's free. I don't want to work. Look at that company over there. They're giving me a pill that I can just consume and everything changes my whole life. You're like, it's the same with how they treat psychological issues and disorders. It's like, oh, here's a magic pill. It'll mask the pain for you. And it has more side effects, by the way, than what we're treating. But, you know, just don't worry about that. It's just the fine print.
That's the media hat. Like, we're all sheep, right?
Yeah.
And I teach, this is one of the biggest lessons I teach my kids is like, don't be a sheep. I mean, if you don't want to do that, you don't have to.
Yeah.
Just because everybody in your school is doing that, everybody in your school is listening to this type of music, doesn't mean you have to. No. They're all sheep. They're all doing what they have to do.
Yeah.
Or what they think they have to do.
Right.
And it's tough for them because they are sometimes they feel like they're not part of the crowd or they're not part of it. But I was like, power to you. If you can be confident, I think both my kids are pretty confident. If you're confident in yourself to just do what you want to do, you're going to make it places.
Right.
You're going to be someone that's going to change the world in quotes, right? You're going to make a change. You're going to make
even
a
if you can make one life better.
Yeah. You're going to make a change in somebody's life. 100%.
And why don't we operate off the premise of put your own oxygen mask on first and then help? Because if you're only helping other people and only giving, you only have a finite amount of energy to give. And you're going to see people can be very parasitic and they'll siphon that energy at any chance. That's why, like, if I go up to that bum on the street and I keep every Friday, I see the same guy and I keep dropping money in his thing. And every Friday he goes and he just goes to the liquor store. He goes to the drug dealer up the road. He just keeps doing that. And I'm like, look, I'm actually enabling you now. I would rather give you skills and inspiration to get yourself out of the situation. I would rather give you that than just dump money in your guitar case. You know, I mean, hey, I'll go buy you a meal or whatever. Yep. But I read this stupid article the other day that was like, you should give money to every bum you walk across, even if they buy booze and drugs with it. You have no right to tell them what they should buy and all this. And I'm like, no. Like, my desire as a human being is to help. I do have that desire. Okay. I'm a very generous person, but I want to actually help. I don't want to just throw money at the problem and then go home feeling like, oh, I'm so virtuous and good because I gave that bum money and he didn't have money. Well, he goes and he ODs on coke after. Well, but it was still based in a virtue because I was giving freely of my stuff to him. It's like, no, I would rather say, hey, come here. Let me buy a quick meal. And then I want you to train my jiu-jitsu class tonight. I'm going to change your life. I'm going to show you that there's a reason why you're sitting on that corner.
He's not going to want to do that, though.
Oh, well, then that's his choice.
Yeah.
I offered. Mm-hmm. They denied it. All right. That was me helping. At the end of the day, each person is going to be left to their own devices.
Yeah.
You're born. I hate to say it's going to sound very cold, but you're born alone and you'll die alone. You'll have lots of people in your life. You'll have parents, you'll have friends, family, and all these things. But make no mistake about it. You are walking your own path. And the moment you give that power away, because that's power to know that you have self-responsibility for your actions. You can pretend to run from it. You can make excuses. But the fact is, reality will beat you over the head with it until you get it. And you are going to try your very best to affect people's lives positively, and hopefully people affect your life positively in return. But what if this, Ryan? What if the world around you and the people around you don't want to have fair exchanges with you? What if they just want to take advantage of you and go, no, you should just give freely of everything. Just give it to me. I deserve it. I'm like, well, I don't know that you deserve it. So if they don't want to, how are you going to live your life? You'll become a slave to those people. You need to operate from the premise of, no, I'm unslaved. I'm free to make my decisions to who I'm going to help, where I'm going to help, how I'm going to help. And if I feel like there's no reciprocation, I know that you're a vampire. I know that you're trying to siphon my energy and get an unfair advantage in your life. And I know you got all the rationale and the reasons why. I know I got screwed over here and my parents didn't raise me properly and I don't have any. Look, I there's so many examples of people that came from the gutter and became incredibly successful in what they do. And then they go out and inspire young people in their communities to do a better job as well. Not encouraging and enabling this victim mentality that says, everybody's out to get me. Everything's unfair. Everybody else has things and I don't. What kind of mindset is that? That's going to kill you faster than anything else. Instead, live free, be free, pursue freedom, find your passion, find your purpose, screw what everybody else is doing, do your thing. And then what's going to happen, what I've noticed, is that I attract people in my life that are like that as well. I attract people like you. I attract certain guests on this show. I attracted a great relationship with people like Michael Tessarian to go and do something of value. And I learned a lot of this from him, by the way. And the people like that are separated from the typical gurus out there. that are there telling you, you know, all you need is like a pair of boxer shorts and sandals, and that's all you need. And you're to go and give of yourself until you're thin as a rail and dying for everybody else, who won't do anything valuable with what you give them, by the way. And that's all you have to do in life in order to be spiritual and win your way into heaven and become a Buddha and to be enlightened and all this shite. Those priest classes are telling you lies. They are that's the enslavement right there, is to tell you, oh, just go and be a do-gooder, and then you win your way into heaven in the afterlife. So don't worry. This is the whole Christian thing. Don't worry. This life is hell. It's horrible. You're living in a prison that's owned by the devil. So survive, do good works, and you'll get rewarded in the afterlife. What else are they, what are they telling these ISIS fighters? Don't worry, 72 virgins coming your way. This life's going to suck. You have to kill a lot of people, give away your humanity, and run, you know, fight to the death for this religion we've created for you, and you'll get rewarded after this life. So that was Rand's problem. She's like, you've got priest classes of spirit and priest classes of muscle. The priest classes of spirit are the religious priests that say, this life is not worth living. The material world doesn't exist. So you're going to go and do good works and win it in the afterlife. The priest class of muscle are the political classes that say everything you earn and produce from your own mind and talent and imagination is to be given back to the government so that we can redistribute it to the people that don't have anything. And they play that game with you. And that game is being played right now that says, look at all these poor people. Look at all these disadvantaged people. We need to take care of them. So we'll take 40% of your income, thank you very much, and we'll give it to them, and we'll even say, hey, there's an advertisement for anybody from any third world country can just come here, and don't worry, we'll take care of you. You get the minivan, you get the house, you get the money. It's like Oprah, you get a TV, you get a TV. And then people are, they're not incentivized to come here to make themselves something and to contribute and to become part of it and to really find that self-esteem. They're being shown, here's a free lottery ticket for you. And that money, trust me, is not just coming out of the thin air. It's coming out of our wallets. It's coming out of everybody that is working and producing and contributing. So that's why it's flawed. And it's not, it's based on a mindset that is being ingrained in people. And it is attracting people that have a loser mentality. And it's also enabling people to stay in a loser mentality. It's not freeing them. So when I come in, and this is the last example I'll give you, is if you came in to train in my dojo, and I said to you, I have all these hurdles I need you to jump in order to get this next belt and to be successful. But you know what? I know it's hard. And I know you're probably going to fail a lot. So to save you from all that grief, I'll do it for you.
Yep.
I'll do all the push-ups for you. I'll kick the pad for you. I'll armbar people for you. I'll do it all for you because I already know what I'm doing. I'm wealthy in my jiu-jitsu knowledge. And I know you're poor in your jiu-jitsu knowledge. So I'll give to you. Am I doing you any favors?
No, it's just like giving the blue ribbon at school or at any track.
Right, the participation ribbon.
Come on, no.
No.
You're not doing any favor for that.
We're
kid.
All equal. I'm not equal to Michael Jordan in basketball. I'm sorry.
No.
I'm not equal to, what's his name, the guy, the fastest man on earth. There's that documentary on Netflix.
Usain Bolt.
Usain Bolt. I'm not equal, and nobody, I can't run as fast.
You're pretty fast, though.
I can't run as fast. I might be able to roundhouse kick his legs so he can't run.
He's pretty tall. He's a tall guy.
He's a tall guy. Yeah. But yeah, he's built genetically to be, and even amongst other, like, what is he, Kenyan, African? Yeah. Like, he's better than, he's the best of his stock in that field. He's the best in the world. Yeah. We're not equal. But as human beings, and in terms of our value as human beings, of course we're equal, but not in that realm, you know?
Speaking of, this just popped in my mind. I was reading something, talking to somebody yesterday about, so there's that 100 meter sprinter, that woman.
Yeah.
And she's she's got like testosterone. She's got the mixed gene, like, so she's has male and female, or more male.
Right.
I don't even know what the terminology is, but so she's producing tons of testosterone.
Right.
And she's just murdering everybody in the 100 meter in the women's class.
Right.
And all these other women were like, how do I compete with that?
Right. Like that female MMA fighter that went into, male that had a sex change.
Yeah. Well, that's a bit different.
That's a bit different. Because this is like one of those very extremely rare situations.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you go, well, where do you compete?
Yeah.
Well, but women are as strong as men, right? I mean, they can compete in the same division.
This is what I was struggling with yesterday. So women say we're equal with men. Like, and I love all women out there, whatever. But
in terms of your value, of course.
But we're equal with men. And then all of a sudden now, well, we can't compete with that because they're not getting gold medals anymore, or they're not succeeding.
Right.
But like that argument is bullshit.
Right. No, the truth is that men and women complement each other.
Yes.
That we complement each other. So I'm not equal to my wife in so many areas.
Absolutely.
And I got to say it. It's the same the other way. And that's why it works. I mean, come on. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
No. But why do all these feminists think that there's something wrong with it? Why do they
have to? Because they're resentful towards the fact that, I don't know, most of these high-level feminists, like we're talking the guys that the lead the movement. See, because I was all for classical feminism where it was just about liberating women and giving them equal rights as human beings. Absolutely. Fine.
We're all human.
Even though someone made extra money because they're like, well, now half the population can also be taxed because they're working now.
Yeah.
And we get to take their children out of the home and raise them in our state institutions
and
destroy
them,
the family unit.
Mold them.
Mold them. Yep. So there were some disadvantages to that, you know, but in terms of, okay, yeah, we want equality for terms of rights. Okay, you got me. But when it comes to, I am not an equal caregiver to my children as my wife. I don't have this. It's not because I'm heartless. It's just because I don't have the same instincts. I don't have the same nesting instincts. I don't have the same level of empathy in that regard for that, in that scenario. I don't have that. My wife just instantly knows what to do. And she even tells me something like, I'm surprised that I know what to do. I just know what to do. I don't know how. Like, I'm wired differently. I'm like, my way of thinking of how I can provide for my family is that I go out and I create something successful that I'm passionate about, and then I'm taking care of everything. That's sort of the male, like, I'm going to go and bring back the bacon, right? Bring back to the tribe. So this whole discussion, it's gotten ludicrous, it's gotten insane. It's gotten beyond reason. So now when you comment on these subjects, you're considered you're against women, or you're against this minority, or you're against it. I'm not against anybody. I just want fairness and justice and reason to prevail. Justice is the scales are balanced, right? Masculine, feminine are balanced. And when you take an imbalance and say, I want women to be men and men to be women, that's not how we're going to get ahead in anything. Yep. And then back to this whole success thing. If you're saying the person who's successful should not have any benefit bestowed to them in their life, all of their success or majority of their success should go to the people that are not striving to be successful. That's like giving a participation award to people. That's not the genuine article. How about this? What if we inspire and educate people to go and do what we're doing, the successful people are doing, instead of saying, I'll just give it you a free lunch, because there is no free lunch.
Nothing free, man.
Any of the wealth accrued comes from, as Rand was saying in that quote, your mind first and then your effort, right? So there's no way, interviewing someone like Ricardo Almeida, that I could claim that I'm equal to him in jiu-jitsu. I couldn't claim that. I could say I also train jiu-jitsu. I could say I would love to go learn from him because he's better at it. He's put more time and energy into it. I would not expect to be paid the same as him if I taught a workshop versus if he taught a workshop. I would not expect to stand on the same grading panel at his level as him. You know what I'm saying? I recognize where I'm not equal to people that I look up to, right? Like even working with Michael, I don't read even a quarter of the books he reads and have the knowledge and expertise and his level of genius in that area. Michael needed help with the technical side and the website building and doing all the back-end work and how to create an efficient model and all that, you know? So we complemented each other because I was strong in an area and he was strong in a different area. This idea that we're going to equalize everybody's talents is going to turn the world into a dull, gray, lifeless hunk of the same undifferentiated crap. And that's not a life worth living in. The diversity is what makes it great. The striving and the suffering and the failure is what makes it great. So people just want blanket band-aid solutions because, you know why? Here's the final thing. Most people live in fear. Most people live in fear. Like, fear is like, it's what drives everything they do and motivates them through everything they do. They don't have, they're not equipped. We're not equipped anymore with what it is to be truly strong. So what I want to do, guys, to wrap this whole rant up, is I want to bring some more brilliant people to this show to help educate you. Ryan and I want to keep making amazing content for you. And yes, We've created a monetized platform for this project because, and we're, I think we're offering far more than what we've put the price tag on it. We're going well above and beyond with what we're giving. If you go and look at our reward tiers, it's like, I think it's a very fair deal. And I think it's awesome. And I also want to show you guys how to duplicate exactly what we're doing, if that's what you want to do, or where to go. You want to start a website, you want to start your own thing, you want to do, how can we help you achieve your vision? That's going to be the focus of this.
Yes.
Not like, we're doing it and you can't and we're hoarding all the resources. That's not what we're doing.
No.
So, you know, I look forward to having more of those discussions and bringing more awesome people and content onto this project, you know?
That was almost an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh my God, we went late. I got to go. We got to go fill some punching bags up. Yeah. Cool.
It's a good show.
All right, guys, that's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to us. Let us know your comments. We'd love to hear from you. Sorry we didn't get to a lot of questions. Got a little bit into it there. But we'll catch you again very soon here back on Truth Warrior. WayOfTheTruthWarrior.com is the site. Hit us up on Patreon.com/Truth Warrior. I'm just about to release a few new martial art training videos over there for you guys. So check those out. And we'll catch you back here very soon. Have a good one.
See you guys.